This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Choose the most unusual matches. Choose the best of the WWF. Choose wrestling's biggest, smallest, and strongest. Choose Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Roddy Piper's greatest hits, and wrestling's bloopers, bleeps, and body slams. Choose George the Animal Steel. Choose the Ken Patera story. Choose the life and times of Captain Lou Albano. Choose the Hulkamania series. Choose the Ultimate Warrior. And choose Macho Man Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Choose WWF World Tour, Smack and Whack 'em, and UK Rampages 91, 92, and 93. Choose a journey back in time. Choose Seen Your Video. It's time for everyone to dust off the VCR and plug it back into the television set as we take a trip into the Colosseum Home Video Vault with your host, Rory McNamara.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode 4 of Seen Your Video, the show where I, Rory McNamara, stick my hand into the damp cardboard box of Colosseum videos, pull one out, and then break it down to within, or very possibly beyond, an inch of its life. However, it is impossible for me to perform such an undertaking alone, so joining me again today is my fellow special relation of the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, Mr. Ben Locke. Ben, how are you, sir?
I'm very good, thank you, Rory. I'm feeling like I'm Ole Gunnar Solskjaer stepping off the bench. Nice target reference. Nice target reference for everybody there.
Well, I was going to say David Fairclough. Yours has probably got a tad more chance of being recognised by more than 0.5% of our audience, but there we go. Yes, for those wondering, and as I did promise for you at the end of episode 3, I was due to have a brand new guest here on episode 4 of Seeing Your Video, but even now in these times, life itself still gets in the way, everybody, so had to rearrange, but Ben has very kindly come off the substitutes bench, as we say, to have a look at another Colosseum video for us from the home videos. Home Video Classics, I think it's called, section of the WWE Network. You think I'd know it by now. So, Ben, of the 67 remaining so far, no more have been added, which one of the videos, and I gave you pretty much free reign to choose, did you decide for us to watch on this evening?
We are watching the Collector's Series edition of Hulk Hogan Real American.
So, the boy from Stoke and the boy from Birmingham will be discussing a tape called Hulk Hogan Real American. Something, something, 51st State, something, something. So, Ben, other than the obvious as referenced there, why did you choose this one for us to look at tonight?
So, two reasons. One, much of a practical reason, and one, a bit more theoretical. The practical reason is, as Rory's mentioned, I've stepped off the bench. So, it's been a very quick turnaround time. Yes. So, we were thinking a nice, easy sort of hour and a half tape to watch. It'll be better for both of us. And the other reason, I tend to veer more to the 90s. So I wanted to watch something from the 80s, if I'm being honest.
Yes, I'm glad you've said that, because I was thinking about this just as I was loading up here, that I've never really talked about Hulk Hogan before. And I've been doing pro wrestling podcasts now for getting on for 5 years. The very first one I did for the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast was November 1995 WCW. So I began with the likes of Dark Side Hogan, Observe This, him whinging about Savage winning the World War III Battle Royal, things like that. But obviously for that very reason, and the fact I always look forward 20 years ago, I've never really had a chance to dip back into the Hulkamania era. And looking at the videos I've still got to get through for the sake of this project, I will be having more than enough chance to do so, but never really talked about it, as I say, so this is going to be amazingly quite an experience for me. And it gives me the opportunity to ask you, Ben, as we are similar in age, he's slightly older than I am, would you ever consider yourself a Hulkamaniac? Was he the one for you growing up?
Not really. I would say probably not, no, because I told this story on Special Relations, but I jumped in around WrestleMania 6. So that was my first tape. So the Ultimate Warrior was always my guy. And then it was Savage, really. And then as 92 hit, we hit sort of Flair and Bret and Bulldog. So Hogan was always obviously there in the foreground, but he was never my guy.
Yeah, I didn't start watching wrestling at all until 1996. So all the Hulkamania era completely passed me by. You'd hear the name Hulk Hogan on the playground and all that sort of thing. And you had, even then on ITV when I wasn't watching WCW, we'd still have the likes of Thunder in Paradise was aired on a Saturday afternoon here. So I was able to get my Hogan fix, if that's not a contradiction in terms, or very uncontradiction in terms, you should say. But the first Hogan thing I can really remember watching in real time was indeed the turn the day after Bash at the Beach. Not that I knew at the time that had happened, because my brother and I, we'd been watching wrestling for about 3 or 4 months, and any of the wrestling that came on or we noticed when flicking through the paper in the TV pages of the Daily Mirror, we would want to watch. And we saw on this obscure, never heard of before satellite channel by the name of TNT. Imagine that. There was something between the hours of 8 and 10 it was on a Friday. Tantalizingly called wrestling. Didn't even call it Nitro, just called wrestling. How little we knew. So we turned on, and there was somebody who I now know to be Tony Schiavone, and I now know to be Larry Zbysko. Scorn and invective out of their proverbial wazoos at what Hulk Hogan had done. Didn't actually say, if I remember correctly now, of course, we can look back on it. Hulk Hogan didn't actually even appear on the Nitro after Bash at the Beach, but that's by the by. And I wondered what it was Hulk Hogan had done. I was intrigued enough to tune in the next week, and it eventually all became very clear. So I only knew Hogan in real time as a heel for quite a while, it must be said. I never really went back and purchased old videos, watched old events of Hulk in his prime. Obviously, I've seen many of them since, but I don't think it's because I'm, you know, from the neck of the woods that I am, the part of the world that I am. I don't think that's really anything to do with it. I do think his appeal is, or at least was, fairly universal. I just don't really feel like he had, to coin a phrase, he said anything to me about my life. Do you think that's a fair comment from your perspective?
I think so.
I just couldn't quite relate to Hulkamania.
Yeah, I was literally just about to say that. You just took the words right out of my mouth. So I'm kind of like you with the WCW thing. So my only really like loving of Hogan was the NWO years. And when I say the NWO years, I'm going from 96 to the end of 98. That would be my time. I don't know whether it's just like when I jumped into wrestling or not, but like I say, he was never my guy at any point. And like you say, I knew who he was, and you know, he was the guy who put it onto the map and all that, but he never appealed to me as a person. You know what I mean? I was never gravitating to him.
I wonder if, in all fairness, or to try to be as fair as I possibly can, it's because we didn't really get the weekly TVs over here.
I think that's fair.
I wasn't watching wrestling at the time anyway, but trying to get back to the late 80s, early 90s, best I can. people from this neck of the woods who are listening, by all means, let me know if I'm right on this, but I don't think things like Challenge were shown, or Superstars or anything like that. Pay-per-views were shown at a great month's worth of delay. I know, for example, WrestleMania 5 wasn't shown over here for the first time until June the 30th.
So
and
we
got on April the 2nd. So we were playing second fiddle, it must be said, even though we did have things like, I don't know, the Sky One Live World Tour event, which I will be getting to here at some point. But we knew of Hulk Hogan. There's no way you couldn't. But I think in the same way over here, Hogan was associated with us in the same way that, I don't know, and he would probably appreciate this comparison, but the other guy wouldn't, kind of like somebody like Arnie or Stallone.
Yeah, I think that's fair, because it's one of those things, if you say pro wrestling or wrestling to somebody of a certain age, Hogan's going to be the first name, the first second name they're going to come out with, isn't it?
You know of them because of what they do.
Yes,
even if you didn't really know what they do.
Yeah, and you know, going back to what you were saying, so we got Sky as a family in November of 92, and Superstars was on at that point, and I think Challenge was, well, that was 92, so obviously he wasn't around in November of 92, so I don't know how long it had been on before that. Yeah, and then, like you say, when he went over to WCW, apart from those Worldwides on a Saturday afternoon, we really didn't get anything like that. Until TNT decided to show Nitro. If you remember the German sports channel DSF, they used to show the pay-per-view. So I was aware of the NWO and I was aware of the turn and all that before I'd even seen the Nitro. But, like, I think at that point, because the WWF was so much more readily available, you were going to stick with that.
I was the guy growing up that the WWF at that time wanted me to be Ree Hogan. Like, I really did think that he was yesterday's news.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That would flinch from shoes being waved in his direction.
Yeah.
And it was all about covering up a bald spot, to use the JR line, part of the seniors to all that sort of thing. But because of this project, I am now going to fill in those gaps, much like he would try to fill in his follicle ones. No, just before we begin, go on.
No, I was laughing at the joke, sorry.
I'll take that, I'll keep that in. So just before we go on, we will get a chance to develop it through this tape, but let's talk briefly. Yeah, just a very quick question. Hulk Hogan in the ring, because to be as charitable as I possibly can, I do think that the very common internet trope, which lasted probably up until the turn of the millennium, probably a good few years beyond that, but I remember when I was first getting online, 99 2000, that sort of thing, it was virulent how terrible Hulk Hogan was in the ring. I do think there has been a bit of a, I wouldn't call it a renaissance from wrestling fans necessarily, that's been putting it a bit too grandly, but I don't think he's bad worker is the first thing you think of Hogan anymore.
So I was never really negative for him. I would say two things about Hogan. One, he has a formula. And when that formula works, why change it? And as we see towards the end of his WWF run and, you know, his WCW run at the start, people didn't want to see that at that point. But I understood why he kept the formula going. And then the other point is, depending on who he was in the ring with, depends on the quality of the match, which we'll see in this on this very tape, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If yes, stick to the formula, but if the other guy can add something to it, great.
Formula and the other guy, both excellent points, extremely pertinent to the remaining four matches, just the four matches we're going to talk about here. I think with no further ado, Mr. Locke, shall we go and see what Terry Boy's got for us?
Let's go for it.
Let's do it. Hulk Hogan, Real American.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life.
So we open up after that intro package of the WWF logo gliding over the sea. Oh, get you right there. I want to say it's a rarity that we get to hear Real American from the very start with the 30-second intro, Ben. Because obviously when Hogan comes to the ring, usually we get straight to the da 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 da, 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 da.
Yeah.
But here we get the 35 seconds of Derringer's scene.
I love the full bombastic opening. It's like something you'd hear in like an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, isn't it? just with the chorus line behind him going, "I am a real American." It is perfect music because, you know, just as he's about to enter the field of combat, you've got this going.
And of course, it wasn't even meant for him in the first place. The US Express.
Damn you, Barry.
Is there an IRS video lurking in the future sequel videos? I fear there might be. Please, if you want to have it back on for a third time, Ben, don't choose it. Or for a fourth time, don't think. Anyway, back to the video we are talking about. In among the montage, we have that shot of him being mobbed whilst on a motorbike. You know the one. Classic iconic shot. Gene introduces us to this tape from our ongoing collector series, as Ben has mentioned, in front of a rather obvious green screen of some tape spooling. Four matches, as I say, to come from, including a tremendous workout, quote unquote. He throws to our first match, which is from WrestleFest 88, as Gene himself acknowledges. The caption even says so. This match, the match after, and the match after have been reviewed elsewhere on Place to Be Nation. I know what's on my brother's button, but we maybe give you an alternative viewpoint for the next three matches. So, to Milwaukee we go for our opening contest, and it must be said we are starting strong here. The hard camera of this one looks impressive, but any close-ups do show the top of the stadium seats are all very empty. Our commentary team are Mooney, Hayes, and superstar Billy Graham, brother. Hogan strides down and tries to shake the cage, just like Andre did. I genuinely think they are testing out how strong the cage is when they do that. Now, take this quote from Alfred any way you wish. His neck is synonymous with everything great, everything truly great about professional wrestling. Okay. I know Hogan's got some brass neck, but I never thought of that. Anyway, Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. A fine way to start indeed, even though I mangle the words Andre the Giant in a way even worse than he would. But the Andre choke makes his debut right from the bell, which is probably for the best. He then really goes to town by bringing in the neck strangle with the shirt thing. Rear chin lock goes on, and already a big Hogan chant is here, and that lifts Terry Boy. He removes the shirt and then unloads with punches in the corner. He then grinds his foot into Andre's throat and follows that up with some elbows. More aggression in the early going than I was expecting here. Giant goes back to the choke, and he hasn't got rid of the shirt yet. He then ties it to the cage with it wrapped around Hogan's neck. No, not his neck. Not the neck synonymous with everything great about wrestling. He then makes a beeline to the door, in as much as Andre can, but Hogan manages to break free and save himself from defeat. Good timing there. I should note the commentators keep calling it the gate rather than the door, and they, of course, are wrong. Bear hug by Andre doesn't last long, but nor does Hogan's attempt to climb out. Big elbow, and Andre goes for the door. That's the door, again, but he gets cut off easily this time. Some sort of headlock by Andre, but as that happens, Giant has a go at pulling the turnbuckle off. He succeeds, but the camera misses it. Clubbing blows, and Ben Hogan's head hits the hard steel. Hulk is on his knees and takes some punches and bites. He also has a cut right in the middle of his forehead. When he is good, he is very, very good. And we all know the rest. Headbutt by Andre, and now another waddle to the door. The door. You see, I'm bitter about that. Hulk grabs his leg this time. He misses a shot and tries for clothesline to knock the big guy down. Clothesline, clothesline thing. Big guy down, clothesline, clothesline. Five punches get Andre down briefly, and then a clothesline does it. Well, what do you know? Leg drop. Bobby gets in and tries to punch Hogan down, and you know how that goes. But as ever, he takes the biggest bump of anybody in a Hogan match. Hulk stops Andre from climbing and wraps him in the ropes. He is Andre the Giant, after all. And after another supercell from Heenan, Hogan climbs out to another quote from Alfred, "Win it the spectacular way." Benjamin, your thoughts on our opener here?
I thought it was actually an all right match. When you think about these two, you after WrestleMania 3, you think, meh. But then, as has been mentioned on the Place to Be Nation podcast, Andre was still bringing the goods in 1988. And yeah, he was pretty good here as well. I also mentioned Superstar on commentary. I was keeping a count of the brothers. It was a disappointingly low five.
Just five? Oh, that one.
Just
that
five.
One. You'd be barely on the floor, let alone paralytic. That's disappointing.
And the other bit of commentary I noted was the fact that Lord Alfred just wasn't listening to Sean Mooney. He quite clearly explained the rules of the match. And then he was like, literally a minute later, so, Sean, how does one win this match?
Oh dear.
Listen, man.
So he's like 2012 onwards Jerry Lawler, who always needs the rules of even the most basic matches explained to him. Could you get disqualified for using a weapon, Colt? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I really liked the psychology of Andre using the t-shirt to tie Hogan up. That was good to see. And I tell you what, he was brave trying to climb, even attempting just to walk up that cage. I mean, obviously he never got to the point of climbing over, but even just to start climbing.
So not for nothing were they ensuring it was reinforced at the start.
Yeah,
they were doing that, I swear.
And I can't remember the WrestleFest card off the top of my head, but I'm guessing Bobby was probably facing Red Rooster or something in the wrestling gear.
Shall we have a look?
You say, yes, have a quick gander. And like you say, the fact he took the biggest bump of the match himself.
Well, that's no great surprise, is it? I really should know this.
I'm guessing so, because it would have been about the right time period, wouldn't it?
The Ultimate Warrior defeated Bobby Heenan in a Loser Wears Weasel Suit match in 4:59.
It was a Weasel Suit match, okay.
I suppose the next question, research everybody, research, is WrestleFest 88 on the network? If so, I will get to that at some point. Allow me just to search. Brett versus Bad News is on there from an edition of Primetime.
Yeah.
But I believe that's all. The event itself is not on there.
The event's not there, but it's all cut up, I'm guessing.
Yep, that's the only thing, yeah. I'll have to wait.
I did think it was going to be rotten. I went 1.5 stars. I could have gone higher. It wasn't as bad as I was fearing.
Look at you bringing the star ratings.
Well, you know, I don't know. I wanted to prove I've actually done a bit of research here.
Well, I'm glad one of us has. this was probably slightly better than I was expecting. It wasn't. I'd probably take it over their WrestleMania 4 match.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Not a high bar there to keep that metaphor around, but you take what you can with 88 Hogan, I think. And there was some psychology behind it. It was basic, but I'm always one of those people, if you're going to try and tell a story in a match and the story holds from first bell to the last, then I don't need it to be particularly elaborate. As long as you
keep
it and it makes sense and it ties in to the beginning, the middle, and the end, then I'm okay with it. And we had that here. It was Andre trying to wear Hogan down by stomping him and punching him and headbutting him and trying to choke him out and tying him to the cage. Okay, I'm fine with that.
Andre in 88 is such an interesting case because as they've been going through the mothership with the awards and everything he's been getting, he's been surprising a lot of people, hasn't he, with just how good he still was. Because everybody seems to think he went on this, you know, dark avenue, you know, big slope after the Hogan match in 87. So you could quite easily have done a double main event of Hogan and Andre, you know, in the cage, and then done Savage and DiBiase for the title. There was no need to do the tag match.
You need to have the SummerSlam 88 main event as it is to start what I still call the greatest storyline in WWF history. But it's often said about SummerSlam 88, just a brief tangent here, about SummerSlam 88, that it still doesn't quite feel like a pay-per-view. It's a MSG. Nobody's really feuding in most of the places on the card. Maybe a match the stature of Hulk Andre to completely finish that off might have gone... Well, it would have gone over well. There's no question about that. But I do like the main event as it is. It's grown on me over time.
Yes, it's a similar sort of pay-per-view to the first WrestleMania, isn't it? It's like a glorified super house show, isn't it? That's the way you describe it.
But yeah, I never thought of that before. I definitely see where you're coming from on that. Stature-wise, it definitely could have been there, but I can see why they didn't.
Yeah. I think that's just us thinking with like modern eyes and, you know, later booking. It probably is the right thing to do.
They probably didn't trust Hulk and Andre alone on pay-per-view, even at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, a little clip here, a little clip there. It didn't need to be so long. You've got Bobby around to do all the heavy lifting, getting myself kicked from pillar to post, very literally. I could watch Bobby take a beating all day, I really could. He is just such a great sport. And we talk about showing ass. No, moonsaults from Bobby every single time. But yeah, this really was okay. It was okay. People got what they wanted, those who did turn up to the stadium, after all. Hogan's comeback was well-timed. It wasn't... We talk about the Hogan formula. It wasn't a cloying comeback this time. I did actually believe it, unlike some of the matches we'll talk about a bit later on. And he won as emphatically as he possibly can, as he was always going to. An odd match to start the tape with, really, but on these, you really want to start strong.
I think that was the whole thing, wasn't it? They wanted to, if the news was going to be an hour, you know, an hour tape, let's give them at least one good match to sell the tape. You can't just sell it on Hogan's name. You need some match, you know, a bit of match that somebody wants to see on there.
Exactly right. And Andre in 88, as the boys at the Place to Be Nation podcast will tell you, MVP all the way, always.
Oh, yeah.
Even when he could barely move, which even at this stage, he was there, but he did what he needed to do, and he got it right.
Like you say, the slippery slope doesn't start till the year after, so we're all good.
We're all good. How all good will we be after this one? Well, we shoot back in time a bit to Saturday night's main event, October of 1985, and it's Nikolai Volkov singing the Russian national anthem, not the Polish one. Vince makes a pun, probably unintentional, about Nikolai waving a red flag in front of a bull. Hogan's interview is left in two. He in his American-made T-shirt. Remember that line? Today there will only be one flag standing, and we all know what one that is. An awkward edit then follows as he comes to the ring with Old Glory in hand. Stars and Stripes Forever is the accompanying music, and you would think they would have tried a bit harder to get the sound mix right for that one. So it's Nikolai Volkov versus Hogan in the white trunks. St. Nick doesn't let Hogan get his shirt off, or even his belt for that matter, and holds him into the buckles, and then helpfully removes them for him. Communism, baby. He chokes Hogan with the shirt, nice match placement, but Hogan no-sells very early on, see what I mean? And the punches all hit their mark. Plus the first outing today for the Axe Bomber. Some people do it better than I do. Headbutt staggers Nikolai, and then another punch does it. Jesse is amazed Hogan has a headbutt in his arsenal. He's not the only one. And then Nikolai lands right on the timekeeper's table. Nick puts on the brakes outside and shoves Hogan into the ring post. Punch to the kidneys, and Vince makes my day by giving me a perhaps sensing victory. Axe handle and more headbutts, and Volkov is in control. He lifts him above his head for a backbreaker, complete with wedgie, but does not go for the cover. Delayed two to no reaction. See, even in 1985, people knew that trope was stupid. Vince says perhaps sensing victory again. All right, don't milk it. Then bemoans that we have seen no scientific wrestling whatsoever. But this is entertainment, pal. Make a note. See if it sticks. Nikolai tries a pile driver, but Hogan blocks and backdrops him over. Slug to the gut by Hulk. Volkov takes over again. Slam and a cover for two. And there's another no-sell, complete with headshake. We don't get the finger point or you just yet, though. Still working out the kinks. Hulk avoids the charge, drops the leg across the chest, and two, make it three. Ben, this was a step back in time and in many other ways as well.
What can I say? It was so slow and plodding. Did we need the full jingoistic patriotism? I'm sure there's people out there who really enjoyed it in 85 or 86, but we didn't need it. I was a fan of the all white gear though. That was a very good fashion choice, I thought.
You like the white?
I did like the white.
Took some adjusting to for me. Just wait till I see him in the blue trunks, but okay.
and the only step back in time I really like is Kylie Minogue, and you know, this one was not needed, but you know, thanks, I think, Coliseum Video. Thanks.
Well, there was a Saturday night's main event Coliseum lurking around at this time, I think. I don't think that has made it onto the network. So unless somebody could furnish me with a copy in 6 and a bit years' time when I get through everything on the network, I'm not going to see that. So putting something like this on would probably be a bit of a coup at the time. Is it fair to say?
It would. I was really happy to hear Jesse. I mean, I know this is before everything happened with the tape situation, so it was lovely to hear his voice. My favorite bit of Vince commentary was when he goes, there's been no scientific wrestling in this match so far. You don't say, Vince.
what's Vince McMahon doing calling out no technical wrestling, for goodness sake?
But yeah, they kept it basic because I think that's all that Volkov could do, really.
This was the opening match on that edition of Saturday Night's Main Event. The crowd had just been treated to the dark match of Rick McGraw, not long for this world, against the Iron Sheik, and followed up by 12 sessions of Uncle Elmer versus Johnny Valiant.
Good God.
Again, if you want to hear a breakdown of that match, dip into the Place to Be Nation Wrestling podcast archives. We're not going
to. And people pay for this, ladies and gentlemen.
People pay. Yeah, this match then. Yeah, I'm... This was what I feared when you recommended this one to me. I still, the Hogan formula, I feel like I've mentioned that so many times tonight. The Hogan formula still wasn't quite down at this point. He did the no-sell head shake out of a body slam and a cover. And that could be because Nikolai's moveset isn't exactly the most advanced on earth. I get that. But we didn't get the finger point. We didn't get you. I don't think it quite got the pop that he learned for it to get. See, I wonder if first period title Hogan, it didn't really come around until probably around about WrestleMania 3 time, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, he's working out the kinks, isn't he?
I still think people like Chad, for example, at Place to Be Nation or North South Connection would tell you that this was Hogan's best or joint best in-ring run. As part of a WWE, not quite sure I would subscribe to that myself, but I thought Hogan carried himself well enough in ring here. If I'd seen this match 20 years ago, I would have detested it. I'm going to be honest with you. I would have hated, oh, that's not proper wrestling. Where's the angle slam? You know, that sort of thing. But again, Hogan's timing in this match, that's the one thing I've really come to appreciate about Hogan now. His timing, in the first match and here, it's excellent. He just does everything when it's required, not a second before, give or take the first no-sell, but I'll let him off there. It just is about building the crescendo.
Yeah. I mean, is it a great match? Is it a great match? No. Is it a good match? No.
It's definitely not a great match in ring. I think we'll be talking about it again in rather negative terms in a few minutes. Because Volkov fucking horrible. No.
Yeah.
He ever had a period of his career? No, do write in and tell me, but I'm not expecting a deluge.
But like you say, it's not great, it's not good, but it's not the worst thing you're ever gonna see.
No,
like you say, I was the same as you. When I saw it on the chapter list, I was like, oh shit, what's this? And you actually watch it, and it's all right. It's only like 5 minutes long.
Only 5 minutes long, yes. I should have mentioned that, as if my notes didn't quite make that clear. The match time, I've got it in front of me, 5:17.
There you go. So, you know, it's not the worst time, 5 minutes you're ever going to spend.
You wouldn't
want watching wrestling.
And we've got to be fair, in October 1985, the kiddies who were allowed to stay up late or as late as they could on a Saturday night would not want more than 5 minutes of 17 seconds of Hogan.
Well, to give you an idea, you know, I spoke about, you know, people actually paid for this show.
Yes.
So I went to a show 21 years ago now, and one of the matches we had was Goldberg versus Tiger Ali Singh. You know, so I can't sit here and criticize these people too much. And I can see it's 5 minutes of your life you're never going to get back, but I don't feel it's like a waste of time.
It's not a waste of time. It's quite fascinating to see Hogan working out what works and what doesn't and going with it.
And the dollar sign. You get the whole bit after with the shoe shining.
Yes, I should say he swiped the hammer and sickle from Fred Blassie and he shined his shoes with it. shined his shoes with it. I'm not going to add any more to that reference. I'm going to move on right there. And we go straight to our third match. Also from Saturday night's main event, we jump ahead to 1988 for this one. Haku is Hogan's opponent, and he gets carried to the ring on his sedan chair. Ben, quiz question, because you beat me at Body Press Your Luck a couple of months ago. What is the name of that music that Haku comes to the ring to?
That is a good question. I don't know, Rory.
It is most commonly known as the Great Gates of Kiev. Mazorksky, there you go.
Yeah, because it is the official sort of king music, isn't it? Because Harley Race had it first, and then yep. Haku, and then Jerry Lawler after that.
Yep. And it also appeared a few years ago on an edition of the Sunday Politics here in the UK. I believe it was soundtracking a piece on House of Lords reform.
Oh, wow. That's,
which never actually happened. So there you are.
Shock horror.
Where are we? We go back to an interview with the Hulkster. Even more important than Andre the Giant, says Vince. Last week, Bossman beat him like a dog. As for Haku, nobody should ever have to bow down in servitude. Might want to keep that one in reserve. And then he introduces Liz, who, as wooden as you like, tells Hulk they have a date with royalty. How many takes did that require? She does indeed lead Hulk down to the ring for their match. Jesse says it looks peculiar, and I entirely agree with him. Vince clarifies that she is on loan from the Macho Man, and that really doesn't help. He holds the rope open for Liz. We'll never see that again. Liz and Bobby depart, and away we go. Hulk Hogan versus Haku. Cheap shot by Hack, and he takes early control with those jabbing fists of his. Hogan chant goes up already as Haku bites him on the nose. So that's where that came from. Haku misses a ground punch, and Hogan is back to his feet. He now hammers away and knocks the king down as Heenan scarpers, and there's the back rake. Ah, Hogan, what a virtuous face. Clothesline sends him back down, and now a rake in the eyes. Hogan runs to exactly where Bobby is stood, just so he can catch his foot. Ugh. And Haku is able to assert himself with a choke. The neck grip of eternal damnation goes on, but we get the swift rise to his feet. Double chop and kick to the head will do it, though. Hogan scrambles to the outside as Heenan presses the taunt button. Are there any games where the manager could do that? Anyway, Jesse calls Liz worthless as a manager as Haku goes for a chop off the apron, but Hulk pours the brain right into it. Hogan in the ring steals the crown, and heavy is the head indeed. Haku rallies with a clothesline and a diving headbutt. Nice suplex, but that only gets the head shake treatment. This is the whole couple right, complete with the finger points. And you know the rest, Ben. And so does everybody listening. That's more like it.
It's what we wanted to see.
That's the admission price alone covered. The Hulk Cup. Not a Hulk Cup, the Hulk Cup. Oh, yeah, and 4 minutes of wrestling before as well. We're going to assess.
It's a better match than Volkov, which is, you know, again, the bar situation. It's a better match than Andre, but it's still, you know, it's still in that sort of very basic territory. But I haven't got a problem with that, because like you say, the match is only 4 or 5 minutes long. It doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to be anything more at this stage. You mentioned in your notes, and I know Jesse mentioned it on commentary. Another one of my issues with Hogan. Even as a face, why does he wrestle like a heel?
I know, right?
Like, and you know, Jesse was the one who called him out on everything, and Bobby obviously later on did as well. But I never understood that. Like, he got away with so much shit, and the commentators and the fans let him.
This is where it starts for me, retroactively. Yeah. But this is where the Hogan. This is where I start to bristle. Thinking about Hogan, you know, this is where the long-standing hatred. This is where it starts to ferment, you know.
Well, you know, Savage was right. It starts here.
Savage was absolutely right. Savage, I should say, was the WWF champion at this time.
Yeah.
Just want to put that out there for those who understandably have forgotten.
And the other bit of commentary I wanted to mention, speaking of Savage and lust and all that kind of thing. So Vince mentions the fact that he has always been quote-unquote inspired by Liz. is that what we're calling it in 1980s America?
Is that what they call it now?
Yeah. I'm inspired. She inspires me.
Yeah, I've had a few evenings where Liz inspired me, but inspired me to achieve great heights, if you will.
There you go.
And he realizes he's talking about knocking one off to a woman who's been dead for 17 years and will move very swiftly on, as I said, we are on, Mr. Mock. Let's try and bring this best we can. Liz as a manager was Jesse Wright when he said it was peculiar and that she was worthless. Fucking hell.
She's not worthless. I don't know if it's peculiar, though, because this was sort of like, say, 88, so that the mega powers was, very much a thing at this stage, wasn't it? So I've got no problem with her being out there. I have absolutely no problem with it, because that's what the storyline dictated.
And at the end of the show, or at the end of the match, I should say, Hogan, all too happy to lift her on her shoulders.
Yeah.
No, all too happy to lift her. SummerSlam here.
Yeah, got that hand straight on her butt, didn't he?
He wasn't wasting any time there, and nobody was going to stop him on this occasion.
So, like we said, you know, Savage was right. That was almost the beauty of the storyline, was, okay, they're portraying Hogan as the face, but Savage is 100% in the right on this.
Well, they say that the heel should always believe he is right. When the heel is right, yeah, is what Crash actually on. Was not wrong, everybody. He was not wrong. This match was the best match of the tape so far. Only 6 minutes. I'm one of those people who, I wonder if Haku is now swung on the other side of the pendulum to being a tad overrated. But I liked his offense here. It was good and it was in your face and it was hard, yeah. And it was really looked like he was roughing Hogan up.
Do you know what I think it is with Haku? I think he's one of those guys that did the max with the talent he had. Mm-hmm. And that's why people like him. There was no wasting time. There was no wasting energy with him. He could only probably get to two and a half stars if you want to go star rating kind of guy. But he was always doing the best he could do.
I think this one was a solid two. He beat Hogan around a bit.
Yeah, I've got this at two.
He didn't seem to me, although he was laying off at any point, he was sticking him in there and sticking him in there good. Yeah. I'm not sure Terry would have been too pleased with that, but 32 years on, it gives us opportunity to allow ourselves a small smile. So,
and as somebody, if anybody's listened to us on Special Relations, we'll know just how much of a mid-90s WCW groove we're in at the moment. So, Haku will always get big points because of his role in the Stud Stable. You know, that Ming run of 94-95 is superb.
There is the customary reference to the Stud Stable that we must do every time we're on a podcast together.
I'm going to get them up there as like one of the great factions. Like, they don't get mentioned often enough apart from me.
Apart from you, yes.
Apart from me.
If only the world would listen to you, Ben.
Well, they better start trying.
All a good time. Now, I thought that of all the Hogan performances so far, this was probably the weakest. I thought this was Hogan sit back for 5 minutes, then just kick it into gear for the last 60. I don't think he offered a whole lot here. Can we keep coming back to it? Does he really need to? No. And I think your enjoyment of Hogan matches with over 30 years distance depends on whether that's a problem for you or not. Do you want to see him go toe-to-toe with his opponents?
I wasn't needing that. No. I think with the modern eye, we know what we're getting from these tapes or this tape. We know the chances are good of what we're going to get in these matches as well. So you're watching it for the formula. Like we said at the top, Hogan is only as good, really, as the other guy. He's got the formula. If the other guy wants to add something to the formula, great. If not, then we'll go with it. This match, it did add something, because Haku, as we said, is perfectly serviceable. And there was that bit outside the ring with Bobby as well. So there was enough going on where you didn't need sort of a million and one, you know, pink penny combinations.
Oh, no.
What you got was perfectly fine.
Yes, it was. I think perfectly fine is going to be the standard description of any of the matches we get on the Collective series.
I think you've got your episode title anyway.
Senior Video 4, perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Rolls off the tongue, does it not? Let's press on. Gene reminds us this is part of the Collective series and gives us a quick history lesson re Hulk's first title run. Many people speculate he will once again be the WWF champion. Oh, do they indeed? So we get some special footage of a Hogan workout. Not a whole lot to discuss here, but for reasons entirely lost on me on the network version, we lose the original soundtrack, which I believe is Jake the Snake Roberts' music. Instead, we get a very weak knockoff of Back in Black. Well, that's disappointing. Why can they not use Jake's music here? Why have they changed that?
No idea. I have one note, which is, yes, he's very muscular and can lift a lot of weights. Thanks.
I think that's the only takeaway we were meant to have from this one. I don't think we were meant to drill down any further and ask any more questions.
Right. Well, I'm not going to. But yeah, it is what it is. You can put the kettle on while it's on. Let's go.
It's fine. Our senior hall will be along in 2 years to ask a question or two anyway. We need not detain ourselves. But why? Why change it from Jake's music? A, because Jake's music is fucking belting. And two, it's on everything else Jake's on.
Yes, I was going to say, they've got it, haven't they? They've not lost it.
I don't understand them with the music sometimes. I really, really don't get it. Okay, it's not quite as bad as editing out Chris Jericho's Even Flow knockoff for WCW and replacing that with Break the Walls Down.
Oh, that annoys me.
Especially as on the Breaking the Walls DVD, that music is left intact.
Yeah.
For the WC. Oh, I don't get it.
The worst one is obviously losing Smells Like Self High Five.
Oh, it's awful.
For that knockoff, I mean, at least Break the Walls Down is good. You know what I mean?
I suppose so.
It's not right.
You don't even get the Self High Five at the beginning of the DDP one now.
To quote Whitney Houston, it's not right, but it's okay. But Self High Five and the Who and this No Jake thing, at least give us some good music.
Kylie Minogue and Whitney Houston.
Oh, two of my favourite guilty pleasures, my friends.
Nicely clarified. Final match. Final match. And it is indeed introduced as the main event of the evening. We nip back to 1987 for Ted DiBiase with Andre in his corner. Sadly for this one, we do get the original audio. The commentary team of Bruce Pritchard, Mike McGurk, and the Duke of Dorchester, Pete Doherty. I quote the man himself, "That's not determination, that's insanity." Well, quite. Ben, by the end of this match, I was kind of wishing that we had the other Pete Doherty doing the commentary on this one.
Oh, it would have been bad. It would have been an improvement.
I'd like to know what his level of engagement would have been.
I have put my first note on this match is commentary tag team from hell.
Oh, my word, is it ever. I mean, Doherty, oh, fucking all this Doherty, the Duke of Dorchester. See, over here in the UK, if you ask somebody to do an American accent, they'll give you one of two things. They will either give you a John Wayne cowboy, or they will do what they think is a wise guy voice, like this. But that is what Pete Doherty sounds like.
Yeah, we all think we're in the mafia.
It sounds like, exactly. This guy's, wonder what connections this fellow's got. He is a level two UK-US impersonation. That is what he is.
Well, I know we've mentioned it on Special Relations, and you've mentioned it on here a few times. about how you're probably the only person around who still watches DVD box sets.
I mentioned one just now, yes.
So I haven't heard these three for a while. They were on some of the 80-minute ones, DVD sets concentrating on the 80s, and the tag team one, I think, as well. So it was a genuine, like, oh my, you know, like when you're regressing back to your childhood and you've got these bad memories or something. It was like that for me. I genuinely forgot how bad these three actually were.
I don't think they commentated on much other than the show this one is from.
Well, am I right in thinking it's something to do with Houston wrestling? That's why it's Pritchard. Yep. So any show from like the Houston area, it's these three.
I'm just trying to look it up. Yeah, I think you're probably right. I'm inclined to agree with you there.
Oh, so, I mean, I like Pritchard on the podcast. He's all right on there, but he's not a commentator, is he?
It's play-by-play on this one.
I know. And old Mike, she's all right as a ring announcer, but not as the third person in the booth.
No, absolutely no way in hell.
And the less said about Doherty, the better.
We've already said far too much. I will be coming back to him in my play-by-play, unfortunately. So
okay, cool.
For fear of brain implosion kicking in, let's talk about the match. Hogan starts off by snapmaring Ted into the ring, then wiping him out with a clothesline. Atomic drop with a great sell on it by Ted, where he goes all the way over the top rope. And the Million Dollar Man needs a regroup with his team, Andre and Virgil. But instead gets a noggin knocker. Pritchard gives that the water maneuver treatment. Play-by-play guy. Hogan brings Virgil in to slam him and big boot him, and we get an early pose. Andre wants to get in, but he'll discuss strategy again, and now we get ourselves a little bit of stalling. Ted waits around on the apron for a very long time before gingerly getting back in. Hammerlock into a leg takedown by Hulk. We would see a lot of that over the next decade, whenever he was briefly, and I do mean briefly, called upon to actually wrestle. We slip outside and Hogan eats the post for Ted's first successful offense of the match. This is Pete Doherty. I'm going to quote it without comment. Virgil is letting Hogan know what he is. Stomps back in the ring by Ted and then gets the choking. A lot of that on this tape. And then the ref gets him to break at four. Hogan with an Irish whip and a punch. That was weird. Scoop slam, and then he walks over the Million Dollar Man's back. Andre, though, manages to grab his leg, and the referee sees it, so that is our DQ finish? Oh, stone me, that is a lame finish. So lame, in fact, it isn't the finish, because the ref instead orders that Andre leave the ringside area and is fined $2,000. What are you, Hebner? A community support officer? So the contest restarts with Ted getting in some punches in a nice elbow, including one off the second rope for a two count. Clothesline by Ted and that lovely fist drop of his. Delay two counts, and that is the cue for the no sell. At this point, they hadn't quite got the timing down, much like I didn't on saying the phrase at this point just then. Leg drop is primed, but it has to wait as Virgil is on the apron. Hulk holds him in place as Ted knees him instead, and then of all things a roll-up secures a three count and title retention for the Hulkster. And you thought that was a modern phenomenon. He taunts Ted with the Nenner fingers on the nose, and it works as DiBiase nabs a chair, but then Hogan does the same and invites him in. Ted declines, though, and Hogan must pose. I was starting to worry. Ben, our final match, your thoughts?
So, first thing, I've done a little research of our friend on Google. In the late 1980s, Vince McMahon put Doherty in the broadcasting booth with the Duke announcing several. So you might get more coming, Rory, I'm just warning you. Several WWF events around the US, but mostly in Boston as a heel commentator. Usually alongside Gorilla and Lord Alfred.
Oh, painful.
But it's either them pair or the Pritchard McGurk pairing. As for the match itself, I really like this match. But I'm a big fan of DiBiase. He's such a smooth technician in the ring. That was the thing I took from watching this. How smooth he was, sort of taking all the moves and all the bumps. And like you say, that those that the fist drop and the elbow drops were a thing of beauty. Gorgeous. Towards the end.
Gorgeous. Just everything he does looks so crisp on offense. Yeah. And on selling. Just
yeah.
A sheer delight. Not an inch of fat on any of those moves or when he's selling either.
He's one of those guys, a bit like he's one of those guys, a bit like Steamboat. You could put him into sort of any territory at any time frame, and he'd still be giving you 2, 3, 4 star matches.
Well, he's got me thinking now. DiBiase versus Steamboat.
Did we ever get it?
I'm actually searching now. Come on, please say yes. Okay, somebody's actually got a game of it from WWE 2K19. I fear that's as good as we're going to get.
If anybody is
listening and knows or has any idea where we can get one, get in touch ASAP.
but genuinely smooth as silk. And, when did you say this from? The 1987, so you'd have only just come into the territory.
It's from 87, yes.
Yeah, so. And, oh, you could go. You could, that boy could absolutely, like you said before, you've got the Hogan formula and then you can add to it. And this showed that off beautifully, I thought.
What did you think of our false finish?
The actual bit was lame. I mean, was it Howard on comment? Was it Howard doing ring announcing? He was about to announce the DQ and then he's like, oh no, I've got to say something else here, haven't I?
Yes. Yes.
So it was a lame, but I like the roll up finish because it was adding something different to the formula, wasn't it? It wasn't the leg drop after the big boot. There was something else.
I've very rarely seen a match restarted like that either. Hogan actually got the win and they still restarted the match. That's a strange one.
Yeah. I mean, with the three guys around ringside, you know there's going to be some sort of shenanigans going on.
Oh, without a doubt.
But why Hulk couldn't take the loss, take the win, sorry, off the DQ, I have no idea.
That's where I thought we were going. I'm so used to DQ finishes on these tapes. Didn't get a single one here.
I did like the spot that, we're doing just before the DQ with the Hogan crisscross, including stamping all over DiBiase's body. I enjoyed that. That was a good
touch. That was a nice one. I do like a good crisscross app from this time frame.
It was 10, 15 minutes of, perfectly good wrestling.
I thought Hogan managed to hang with him here.
Yeah. Yeah, DiBiase was the star of the show, but, Hogan more than played his part.
Whenever Hogan breaks out the hammerlock into a leg takedown thing, he's taking it seriously.
I did put that in my notes. I said, look at how Hogan's actually broke out some chain wrestling here.
Yeah, then he's been in a match when he does that.
Shit got real.
Yeah, I'm very glad we ended on this match. I could have lived without DiBiase taking a pinfall loss so soon into his career. Which I believe I've just found on the history of WWE.com. Is this the match? WWF at Nashville, Tennessee Fairground, September the 26th, 1987. WWF World Champion Hulk Hogan pinned Ted DiBiase after DiBiase collided with Virgil on the ring apron.
That sounds pretty likely.
Because they did not say on the tape where this match was from.
No.
Nor did they, because on the network, they very helpfully said the from where the matches are derived, but not for this one. Yeah, we're going to say it's there. So, DiBiase had been around for 3 or 4 months at this point, and he's doing a pinfall job to Hogan. So, there you are.
Well, we always, the story is, isn't it? This is the character that Vince McMahon wanted to play, always wanted to be. So he was going to get pushed to the moon no matter what. And the fact that it's a good wrestler portraying the character on top of that.
I just love DiBiase so much. I hope I get some DiBiase showcases to sink my teeth into at some point.
Oh.
That's the rabbit hole I really do want to go down. for example, this Mid-South stuff, I don't know a whole lot about. Mm. That's something I'd like to sit back and know I would enjoy one day.
Well, you know, doing these tapes, doing this journey, and the range, the year range that these tapes go on, you're going to get a lot of DiBiase on you. There's going to be at least, on the compilations, there'll probably like be one or two matches per tape with him in.
See, that's a better way to look at it than a lot of IRS, as we discussed at the start.
Money Inc's only a year. You'll be all right.
I feel like I've seen a zillion Money Inc combinations already in the course of this project, and I'm only on video number four.
I don't know, you've been a sort of around the internet wrestling fandom a bit more than me. Am I the lone voice that actually quite likes Money Inc? Because everybody I've heard say they don't like him, but I'm quite a fan.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to check. That's fine.
I'm the one who's going to have to watch IRS exclusive matches on and off every month for the next 6 years, so... I'm going to blame you.
Don't get me wrong, God, IRS is quite a book. It's quite boring, so I'm not gonna say that they're amazing.
We've discussed him too much already today. He will have his moment in the rain. Don't worry. Yeah. Good match here. We never got the big super duper Hogan DiBiase match that I would like to have seen. So this will do. I think it's probably a nice way to put it. This will do.
A little bit
frustrating that this is pretty much all we got, but I liked it. I reckon they could have done 50 minutes on pay-per-view. I reckon Hogan would have lifted his game even in 87-88 to give or hold his own against Ted DiBiase. I honestly think there was enough here for me to suggest it was within his capabilities and within his Taps head.
Well, you've talked about the sort of slam tag match, but you know, you could have quite easily have done two singles feuds with DiBiase against Savage and Hogan. Mm-hmm. And we never really got it.
No. Well, that's the beauty of these tapes. We are able to unearth things we would otherwise not have seen.
Yes.
Yeah, I did like this match a lot. Just any excuse for DiBiase, I'm all there. Even with this commentary team.
My star rating, I went 2¾, but I put in brackets if muted.
Yes. Cotton buds at the ready, I think, is the best way to enjoy this match. Not much to say on this one anymore now. Gene wraps by calling Hogan one of a kind. Well, ain't that the truth? And for us to watch out for more Collector's Series videos, as indeed I will. Then a terrible graphic closes us out. They didn't even put the stars on the flag. It looked horrendous. I talk about Jalux Paint 2. This wasn't even Jalux Paint 0.1. But that is how we finish this tape. So, Ben, let's get straight to our awards for Hulk Hogan, Real American. So, our rewind moment of the tape, the best match or moment.
Best match, I went with Ted DiBiase. The best moment would probably be that match as well. Like we've alluded to, the fist drop was a thing of beauty.
An arguable point. DiBiase match, definitely the finest. What will be your fast forward moment on this tape, the worst?
Oh, Nikolai.
Again, as I said earlier, just by virtue of existing, Nikolai makes himself available for this award and he grabs it all too keenly and all too overdeservedly. Our pause award, the most striking visual of the tape.
It's one we didn't really mention. And it's from the same match. It's from the Heku match. The chop down to Bobby, that wiped Bobby out and took him to the back. And like I said, that Hogan all too readily grabbing Liz's ass.
I very much considered that one. How could I not? But I went for the original shot of the WrestleFest 88 match. Before we saw the empty seats up there in the bleachers, I thought that was a beautiful description of what the WWF were at that time period. Now, it even made me feel a warm and fuzzy, nostalgic inside for a period I very rarely get warm and fuzzy and nostalgic about. I thought it was beautifully shot, and yeah, it got an R out of me. And that's not always the easiest thing to do. And finally, to wrap completely with our final award, and that is to sum up this tape, Benjamin, would you say that Hulk Hogan Real American is a buy, i.e. a must get, must see? Is it a rent, as in a, yeah, I might well check this one out? Is it a bargain bin, if you stumble across it after about 3 or 4 years, and might as well throw it in if you can be bothered. Or is it a wipe and avoid at all costs? What do you think?
I think it depends how big a fan of Hogan you are. So I don't think it's a buy, but I don't think it's a dump either. I would go either rent or bargain bin. It depends on your Hogan feelings, I think. Because, it's an hour, it's four matches, and, you know, three of them are, you know, okay, like we say, not a waste of your time.
The tape clocks in at 56 minutes on the network. Now, yeah. You can get that one done in a lunch break.
Yeah. And the one match we don't like is only 5 minutes long, and even with the bit, you know, so you're probably talking about 10 minutes with all the bit before and after the match.
And the best thing if you do watch it during a lunch break is that you have to watch it with the sound down. So when match four rolls around, nobody's going to be giving you that look.
That sounds like the voice of experience.
I've said too much already. This is a very solid rent for me, partly due to the length, partly due to the fact it covers a lot of Hogan. Now we get 88, 85 and 87 Hogan on here. And it's a bit of a shame in that respect we don't get them in chronological order so we can really chart the progress. But if you went back and, say, watch them in that order, you can see Hogan getting it. And indeed, it must be said, Vince McMahon getting it as well until we ended up where we ended up. Now, I'd probably enjoy this tape a lot more than, say, a Hogan 89-91. And I'm sure it's out there and I'm sure I'll come to it at some point. For a time period that, as I said at the start, I was a little unfamiliar with, other than, say, the big pay-per-views, I found this really quite enlightening and genuinely interesting watching it with a critical and candid eye. So for me, a solid rent, but with the network, you can fire it up, say, 56 minutes, get it done. And by all means, let me know what you think. So there we go. That is episode 4 of Senior Video in the books. Ben, thank you very much for joining me, especially at such short notice.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. And I'm now going to sit back for the next 50 minutes while you tell everybody there's 10 zillion things you've got on these networks.
It's not that bad. I'm not quite at Jenny and Andy levels just yet.
Oh, you're ubiquitous.
Okay, so by the time this has come out, we will have recorded our new special relations episode.
Oh, special.
Am I right in thinking of that?
Special.
Yes. So it's going to be a very special episode. For those who are not, we're not going to reveal why.
No, tune in.
Okay, it's a special episode. Yes, you'll have to tune in. It's going to be very good, I promise.
The latest edition of the chicken salad will be out. Somehow we're going to try and find positives out of King of the Ring 95. not to spoil it too much, but two of us did, one of us didn't. I'm also part of the Highway to the Impact Zone series presented by Mr. Logan Crossland. I'm on every other episode, so I've done one already. I think by the time this comes out, we'll be on episode 3. So yeah, that's really good fun of going back to 2004 TNA. Is there anything else on the wrestling feed? No. And you never know, Mina Miranda's show might be out by the time you hear this on the pop feed. It might not. But she's moving to Slovakia, so she's got every reason to delay it coming out. But she's got a very, very, very
And that's it for me.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
That's it.
I did wonder. Yeah,
sorry about that.
Ever in demand, Ben.
Well, you know, people like me.
Sure. I know.
I don't know why.
That's discussion for another day. Anyway, you can hear me. Yes, me. On the special relations. So do look out for that one. Again, repeat, a special episode, but you're going to have to wait. No clues here, I'm afraid. You can, of course, also hear me on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. By the time this show has gone out, you should be able to hear me on the WWF show discussing King of the Ring 2000. What is it with poor King of the Rings I was talking about on this show. I've got that. I've got Mick Foley, Commissioner. I've got Stevie Richards and the beginnings of what would become Right to Censor. So lots to discuss there. And of course, we've got our WCW and ECW shows working through pro wrestling from 20 years ago, month to month to month. So do check that out. As I say, if you can listen to podcasts, you can find that show. And I do recommend you do. But that's all I pretty much got to say here. So Ben, thank you again for joining me on this program.
Thank you very much again for having me.
I will, of course, have you back to not do an IRS special at some point in the future.
Oh, don't say that.
Oh, yes, I just say now, if you do want to contact us or mock Ben about his love for Money Inc., why shouldn't you? You can find us. The best place to do that, I always ask you, Ben, to make sure I've got this right, that is on Twitter at our special relations account, which is PTBNSpecialRel1. I will take that as a yes. Okay. PTBN Special Rel 1 is the place to find us on Twitter for all discussions about our special relations show, this one senior video, the 10 million things Ben does, the 9 million things Callum does. Drop us a line on there. Anything you specifically want me to look at from the home video classic section of the network, just get in touch and we will get there. Or indeed, if you want to be on a future show, drop me a line and we can do the rest. Hulk Hogan, Real American, I have seen your video. I'll see you all next time.